This is Nachyomi, Sefer Shemuel Aleph, chapter 10. Shemuel anoints Shaul as the first king of Israel and informs him that on his way back home, he is going to experience and witness three signs that testify to the fact that Hashem's plan for the nation of Israel is now playing itself out through his own life. First, Shaul will meet two men near the tomb of Rachel, who will substantiate Shemuel's message that the donkeys Shaul had been searching for had indeed been found. They had returned home on their own, and will also confirm Shaul's suspicion that his father was probably more worried about him, about Shaul, than he was about the donkeys at this point. At the second rest stop along the journey, Shaul is going to encounter three men who are on their way to worship Hashem at Bet El, and these individuals will give him two loaves of bread as a gift. Finally, Shaul is informed that he will meet and join together with a band of prophets and will undergo a spiritual transformation whereby he himself is going to be granted prophetic inspiration, accompanied by four musical instruments. So we notice the number two men, then three, then four musical instruments. Shemuel also foretells that the nation is going to gather at Gilgal and that Shaul is supposed to wait for Shemuel to make an appearance before offering any sacrifices or going out to war. We're going to read more about this incident soon and the impact that it has on the future of Shaul. All of these signs, though, occur exactly as predicted by Shemuel. When he returns home, Shaul doesn't say a word about the details of his new job, the anointment, the selection as king. He just acts as if he had gone on a search mission for donkeys and he had come home. Shemuel convenes a national meeting at Mitzpah, and after once again castigating the people for their insistence on having a king, which was perceived as capitulating, as succumbing to weakness, he conducts a lottery through which Shaul is identified as the chosen monarch. Surprisingly, however, Shaul is nowhere to be found. He's hiding amongst the luggage to avoid notice. Shemuel is able to find him and sort of triumphantly and dramatically introduces him to everyone. Many of the citizens immediately accept his authority, embrace him as the new king, bring gifts of tribute to him. However, there are some naysayers who are unconvinced of his ability to lead or his qualifications, and they refuse to offer him any sign of acceptance of his regime or his authority. So Shaul, with his characteristic modesty, really ignores these slights. He figures that time will justify the selection that has been made, and that he doesn't need to address the objections that are being directed towards him. Now, there's much to comment on in this chapter. There are a lot of details that are really fascinating. I'm just going to point out some highlights. The signs provided by Shemuel are different than signs that we've seen in other stories in Tanakh, where the purpose of the sign is to reassure the recipient of the prophecy or the message of its truth. Shaul doesn't seem to have any doubts here. Instead, the purpose of these signs seems to be to chart the course of his own evolution from just a regular person who was seeking donkeys. That's the message of the first two men that he encounters, that the donkeys have been found. Next, to a recipient of tribute from those seeking Hashem, symbolized by the three men who are going to Bet El and give him two loaves of bread. And contrasting, of course, with the naysayers that refuse to give him any tribute. And third, he's going to himself become someone who encounters Hashem directly through the intimate experience of prophecy that he shares with the prophets that he meets. Again, we noted that the number 2, 3, 4, the numbers increase in each of the signs, indicating again perhaps that we are looking at the growth, the process of development or emergence of Shaul as a leader. The idea that he has to combine the quality of humility with the quality of authority, with the quality of inspiration on even a prophetic level in order to be a really good king for his people. That's one concept here that's very significant. Another one is that we see that on one hand, the first sign is presented to Shaul near the tomb of Rachel. Now, Rachel is actually the ancestor of Shaul. Shaul is from the tribe of Binyamin. By mentioning Kivurat Rachel, by mentioning the tomb of Rachel, the Navi is pointing to an element of Yichus, of the lineage of Shaul, that part of his entitlement to the throne, part of what's going to give him credibility in the eyes of the people as a king, is the fact that he comes from the favorite wife of Yaakov, namely Rachel. On the other hand, when Shaul joins with the prophets, we see that the phrase Hagam Shaul Banavi'im, is Shaul also amongst the prophets, is coined. This phrase means that Shaul, based on his background, based on his family, based on his heritage, doesn't seem like a person who would be expected to prophesy and to be able to experience prophetic inspiration. And the response, the rejoinder to this statement, is Shaul also among the prophets, is that people who prophesy are not necessarily descended from other prophets. Individuals emerge who are able to partake of this experience on their own merits. And so too is Shaul that way. So that emphasizes the unimportance of heritage, of family background, of Yichus, and so on. So how do we reconcile these two ideas? So it seems like there are really two issues that every king has to face. The first issue is, how is he going to be accepted by the people? How is his credibility going to be established? And for that, for better or for worse, one needs to have the right lineage, the right heritage. Shaul has that. So therefore, he's going to be able to gain the trust and gain the allegiance of the people. At the same time, insofar as his leadership is concerned, being descended from a certain family is not going to cut it. He needs to have the knowledge, the moral character, the sense of ethics, the ability to remain true to his principles. That's what he's going to need to provide genuine leadership. And that's what's going to determine whether his kingship is accepted and approved by Hashem. So the lineage is important insofar as the people are concerned, their acceptance. But the internal factors are more critical when it comes to Hashem's acceptance of the king. And that's why both elements are noteworthy. The background of Shaul, which he needs in order to win the hearts of the people, and the internal quality of Shaul as an individual, which is what's really going to make the difference in terms of his relationship with Hashem. Shaul's excessive modesty is also a subject worthy of consideration here. While it's praised in some of the Midrashim as a testimony to his greatness, other rabbinic sources construe it as reflecting a lack of confidence or assertiveness, which is really unbecoming of a king. The truth is that the career of Shaul ultimately substantiates the more negative perspective on his modesty. It was really a symptom of his insecurity and his need for human approval, his fear of rejection by his brethren or subjects, rather than a genuine and heartfelt humility that's rooted in an awareness of the Creator. Had it been genuine anava, had it been a humility that was predicated on, that was founded on his relationship with God, it would have given him the strength to withstand temptation and not to capitulate to peer pressure. Instead, his humility and modesty revealed a weakness in him, a vulnerability, a dependence on the approval of others that ultimately will undermine him and proves to be the fatal flaw for Shaul in the long run.